My pleasure. Introduce Brian Goffman. Somebody hit it. If they hit it now, it'll ruin it. Good evening. Tonight we commemorate the recent fifth yard site of Mitch Gross, Menachem Avram ben Nachman Moshe. And we will learn Le'iloi Nishmaso. When thinking about Mitch, one no doubt remembers what a great athlete he was and how much joy he took from playing ball. There are many memories, such as the time Mitch declared, "Boys, if you give me the ball, I make the shot. You don't give me the ball, I don't make the shot." There was also the time that tonight's Maggid Shear came back from visiting BMT and told us, "I watched an intramural game. 9 guys trying to get the ball away from Mitch." It's truly a wonderful tribute to Mitch that the MGBL is thriving and the league creates a wonderful opportunity for boys and girls from our community to play ball together throughout the winter. As many of you know, later in life, Mitch very seriously elevated his Avodas Hashem. This included an avid study of Daf Yomi. And while he did not get to complete Shas in Yeshiva Shalmata, his beloved brother-in-law Saul, also a great guy, has continued learning the Daf on Mitch's behalf. But I think what stands out the most for me about Mitch, and I'm sure many of you feel the same, was just how much joy he took out of whatever he was doing. Life is a series of moments, and Mitch celebrated as many as he could. Moreover, I think that the only thing that Mitch enjoyed more than being besimcha was being mesameach others. The Slonim Rebbe explains that the essence of simcha is when we recognize the wonderful gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, joy is our natural reaction. Mitch embodied this ideal, and through his infectious charisma, love of life, and love of others, he inspired those around him to greater simcha. It is a true covet for Mitch that you have turned out this evening. Mitch had so many friends, and in truth, he established friendship with almost everyone he met. He particularly established a lot of lifelong friendships during his summers in Camp Morasha and his years at MTA. Unfortunately, two of his classmates, and Mitch's very close friends, Mikey Jockowitz and Jeff Freeman, are in the Olam HaEmes with Mitch as well. However, of the circles in which Mitch traveled, the oldest and perhaps most special is the Dov Rebel Kew Gardens Hills Chevra. This group has a very special bond. Mitch had a particularly special relationship akin to that of David and Yohonasan with Kenneth Polinsky, who lives in Eretz Yisrael and cannot be here this evening. No doubt, this yard site is a very emotional time for Kenneth as well. Another very close friend of Mitch from that group is tonight's Maggid Shear, Rabbi Danny Rapp. Now, while I'm supposed to mention his professional credentials at this point, I won't for two reasons. First, many of you still find them hard to believe. Second, we all know a much more interesting version of his biography. I will say the following. Since his days at MTA, Rabbi Rapp has become a stellar Talmid Chacham and a committed servant of the Jewish community. In the tradition of his family's legendary caring for others, he ushers Geirim into Klal Yisrael, protects Agunos, and ensures that there's a forum in which Pshara and Din are achieved with integrity. He also uses those same elements of his personality that used to entertain us to encourage his Talmidim in YU to grow in Torah, and he helps build their self-esteem. Frankly, some of them only make it this year because of him. Therefore, it is my pleasure to put you in the ironic position of fulfilling the mitzvah of Adarta Pnei Zaken and standing for Rav Yitzchok Zvi Beresh, as we know him, Rapp.
Thank you, Irv. You just mentioned the Mitch that we knew and loved. As I went back with Mitch back to Dove Revel, before Dove Revel, we were the Young Israel together. We Dove Revel, MTA, a little bit of YU, a lot of Morasha. But of course, one of the great memories of Mitch that we all have is in the, well, who knew, the end of his days, when he suddenly became much more into learning, much into the growth. It's very interesting. The reason I decided to speak about the topic of Sfiras Omer, besides the fact that I think we're in it right now, is because of the idea Sfiras Omer in Parshas Emor, which we're going to read in 2 weeks, talks about that Sfiras Omer is a connection between two karbanos. On the second day of Pesach, we bring the Karban HaOmer, a carbon that is brought from barley, one of the only two carbonos that is brought from barley. Barley is in the time of the Chumash, even the time of the Gemara, wasn't eaten by people, it was animal feed. And it connects that carbon, the carbon of the barley, the carbon ha'omer, to the carbon shnei ha'lechem that we're going to bring on Shavuos, the carbon that is a higher level brought from the wheat. The idea of sphere is a time of growth. When we are going from our lower level, from coming out of Mitzrayim, and growing towards the Kabbalah HaTorah of Shavuos. And that is Sfiras Omer, step by step. And again, that was the message that Mitch told us. Of course, there's other things. Surprised you didn't mention today was the Masters. How can you think of a green jacket without thinking about Mitch? Obviously, comes to mind. So that was the Parshas and Emor. In Parshas Emor, they talk about the Sfiras Omer being a connection between the carbon, the two carbonos, the carbon HaOmer and the carbon Shnei HaLechem. However, when we're going to read in Parshas Re'eh about Sfiras Omer for the second time, it's a very different type of connection. It does not talk about the connection of two carbonos, but rather it talks about the connection between the two holidays, the two chagim. We begin counting on Pesach, and we stop counting on Shavuos. So in the two places where Sfira is mentioned in the Torah, it comes across as connecting two very different things. Okay, what's the difference between the two of them? It's an important difference. Now, unfortunately, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and since we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we did not have a Karban HaOmer, and if things don't change soon, we're not going to have a Karban Shnei HaLechem either. So therefore, if you don't have a Karban HaOmer, you don't have a Karban Shnei HaLechem, you can't have a Sfiras HaOmer. On the level of the Oraisa, there is no Sfiras HaOmer, since it's only meant to connect the two Karbanos. However, according to the position that's taken in Parshas Re'eh, the connection is between Pesach and Shavuos. Thank God we had a Pesach. Things work out, we're going to have a Shavuos as well. Therefore, you still have Sfiras HaOmer. And that leads to the most basic machlokes regarding Sfiras HaOmer. And that is, the Sfiras HaOmer nowadays is a mitzvah d'oraisa? Is the same Torah commandment that we had when the Torah was given, does that still exist now? Or no, is that only when there is a Beis HaMikdash, but now we have downgraded from the mitzvah d'oraisa to a mitzvah d'rabbanan? It's interesting to note that these two approaches that are taken in the Torah have absolutely nothing to do with avelos. The fact that we have the different traditions, whether to shave, whether to go to the movies, whether to listen to music, getting married, etc., in the sphere, that has nothing to do with any of this. That only came in the time of the Gemara by Rabbi Akiva. That really has nothing to do with the counting of the Omer. It just happened to turn out that way. So we have two opinions. One opinion is that nowadays we still count on a level of d'oraisa, according to the Torah. The second opinion is that no, nowadays it's only mid-d'rabbanan. What's the difference? Either way you have to count. Either way you're going to make a bracha. So one important difference is, what time do you count? The general rule that we have is that if you have a doubt about something, a suffix, so if it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's suffix d'oraisa l'chumra. That if I'm not sure whether I benched or not, and I ate a requisite amount of food, so if I'm not sure if I benched, I have to bench again, because that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. However, if I'm not sure if I made a bracha rishona, that's only a d'rabbanan, I'm not going to make another bracha. Safek d'rabbanan l'kula, safek d'oraisa l'chumra. There is a major discussion, which applies on a daily basis, as to what does nighttime begin. Astronomically, there's two possibilities. One possibility is sunset. When the sun dips below the horizon, that is sunset, even though it's pretty light outside. Even though the rays of the sun are doing a pretty good job of getting over the horizon, still, the sun has now dipped below the horizon. You can't see the sun anymore. That is what's called sunset, shkia sachama. That's one possibility. The second possibility is, no, it's much later. It's at the point when the sun dips so far below the horizon that it actually becomes dark. That's Tzeisel Kochavim. So we talk about night, beginning, right? Friday night, when does Shabbos begin? When does Shabbos end afterwards? When can you daven Marv? When can you say Kriya Shema? So you have to figure out, when does night begin? So what do we assume? Which one is it? So once again, we're not sure. It's a sort of a suffix. According to some opinions, it's now, some opinions, it's later. So what do you do? So again, if you're dealing with something like Shabbos, so you want to make sure not to be Machal Shabbos. So going in, we assume that it's right when it dips under. And going out, we assume it's much later. That's why Shabbos takes longer than 24 hours. Because Shabbos, it's a Torah prohibition. You want to be very careful with that. So therefore, we are machmir on both sides. What about Sfiras Omer? At what time can you count the Omer? So that goes back to the question that we started it. Is Tvi'as HaOmer a mitzvah d'oraisa or is it a mitzvah d'rabbanan? According to the opinion that it's d'rabbanan, so therefore right after Shkia, as soon as you're going to daven, right, in the young Israel, we always daven Mincha and Maariv together. We start Mincha maybe a minute or two before Shkia. By the time we start Maariv, it's definitely after Shkia, not a question about it. That's how we used to do it in Ger when I was a little boy. So therefore, you don't have a problem with it. Therefore, you can do it right away. However, if you tell me that's a mitzvah d'oraisa, then you have to wait a little bit longer. So that would be this machlokes. What do we hold? Bottom line. So the truth of the matter is, the majority of the Rishonim hold that Tzvi'as HaOmer nowadays is only midrabbanan. That's only rabbinic. That really the main connection is between the karbanos. We keep on counting Tzvi'ah because we are hoping, we are expecting that the Beis HaMikdash will be built very soon. But as we do it now, it's only d'rabbanan. So the Shulchan Aruch says that technically you can do it right away at Shkia. However, recommends, if all else is equal, you should wait a little longer. Wait until Tzeis HaKol Chavim. So that's what they do at a lot of the shuls here. So we daven Maariv afterwards, we're not going to have a problem. If they daven Maariv beforehand, right? So I assume what they make an announcement is that different shuls have different announcements. If you can remember to do it later, do it later. But if you're going to forget, you can do it now with a bracha, because really it's only midrabbanan. That's the bottom line answer. Another interesting question that comes up is, what about women? Do women have to count Tvi'as HaOmer? So what are the rules? So women are chayiv in all mitzvahs, except for a very small category, mitzvahs aseh she'hazman grama, time-bound positive commandments. So is Tvi'as HaOmer a positive commandment? It's like shir. Good. Is it time-bound? It would seem to be time-bound, so you would imagine that women wouldn't be counting Tvi'as HaOmer. There's an interesting Ramban in Kedushin which says that Tvi'as HaOmer is not Zman Grama. And therefore women technically have to count. Very unclear where he gets that from. There's a lot of Achronim to try to explain what the Ramban's talking about. Today wasn't, among the Yortzei said it also wasn't today, is it wasn't the Rav's Yortzei today also. So they had a discussion about the Rav had an interesting approach, but ultimately he said the whole thing's a waste, it's a misprint. That really everybody agrees that it's a mitzvah sasesha as man grama. Really, women don't have to count Tzvi'ah. However, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that women have accepted upon themselves to do this mitzvah. Right? Ashkenazim for sure have this idea that even if women aren't chayiv in mitzvahs, they have the right to accept it upon themselves. That even though a woman doesn't have to shake lulav, and she doesn't have to sit in the sukkah, and she doesn't have to hear the shofar, if they want to do it, that's wonderful. They can do it, they can make a bracha on it. So therefore, women can count Tzvi'ah as well. However, the Mishnah Berurah makes a comment that women are more likely to forget than men. So besides being a random sexist comment, it's one approach, right? But in all likelihood, what the Mishnah Berurah is saying is that men all go to Maariv with a minyan, yes? So because of that, you're going to daven in shul, they're going to do it. Women who don't generally daven with a minyan for Maariv are more likely to forget, so therefore, this is before they had iPad apps, you know, they have to make a little harder of an effort if they're going to count to make sure that they don't forget. The most famous machlokas when it comes to Tvi'as HaOmer has to do with the question of what is Tvi'as HaOmer? Is it one mitzvah or is it 49 mitzvahs? So the Tosfos quotes the opinion of the Bahag, and the Bahag says that Tvi'as HaOmer is only one mitzvah. Is a mitzvah to count 49 days, and every day you make a bracha. In the event that a person forgets one day, for whatever reason, can't count Tvi'ah one day, so once a person misses a day, so you're not going to be mekayim the mitzvah anymore. You will not have counted 49 days of the Tvi'ah, and since you have not counted 49 days of the Tvi'ah, you better stop making the bracha, because you're not being mekayim the mitzvah. That is the opinion of the Bahag. Rav Sadia Gaon, and probably the majority of the opinions, disagree. They say it's 49 different mitzvahs. Every day there's a mitzvah to count. And if Pama misses one day, too bad, so sad, but still the mitzvah lives on. So for example, if a person, men are supposed to put on tefillin every day. If I forgot to put on tefillin yesterday, can I put on tefillin today? Absolutely. Do I make a bracha when I put it on today? Absolutely. One has nothing to do with the other. So therefore, the opinion of Rav Sadia Gaon and the majority opinion is that in fact, it is 49 different mitzvahs, and even if someone would forget to count one day, they would keep on going. As I'm sure everyone is aware, traditionally, if someone forgets a day, what do? You stop making the bracha. Why do you stop making the bracha? So it's not because we think that you blew it. We said early on that there is a concept that safek brachos lahakel, that if I have a doubt, so I'll do the mitzvah, but I won't make the bracha on it. So too, in this case here, what's going to happen? So there is an opinion that says I can't make a bracha. Brachas are not ma'akev. If I go and I count my sfira, and I don't make my bracha, it counts all the same. So therefore, don't make the bracha. Big deal. But keep on counting. Keep on counting because you still have the mitzvah. You still should keep on doing it. It's very interesting. I heard from a rabbi out of state recently said to me that if it was up to him, he would stop this and he would let people keep on making a bracha even if they missed a day. Why? Because people get confused. People think, I missed a day, I'm not going to count sphere anymore. So the second Shabbos, you make early Shabbos, you forget to count that night, you forget to count the next day in the morning, and all of a sudden, you're not going to count the next 30 days. Because you don't understand, you're going to end up missing all of that. The truth of the matter is, you probably could make a bracha if you had to. So, therefore, it's important for people to know that really you have to keep, even if you miss a day, even if you miss 10 days, whenever you remember, you have to count, maybe without a bracha. Particularly if you're in shul. If somebody's in shul, why does the rabbi make the bracha out loud and not the chazan of most shuls? Ever wonder? Because there is a concern that maybe the chazan, he missed a day. The rabbi, the assumption is, he probably comes to shul every night, he probably didn't miss a day. So the rabbi makes the bracha out loud. Why does he make it out loud? Because he wants to be motzi. If anybody is out there who missed a day, so answer amen to the rabbi's bracha. It's the same as having been made the bracha yourself. And with that, you keep on counting, not a problem. So that's what you should do. You should keep on counting. You should go to shul and hear the rabbi's bracha, or whoever's standing next to you, just be yotzi with the bracha and you'll be fine. Since the truth of the matter is that we really do think that you can keep on making a bracha, even after you missed, therefore, we are very makel. If you have any other excuse to be making the bracha, we let you do it. So the most famous case is as follows. Rabbeinu Tam discusses, what if you forgot to count that night, can you count the next day? Is the bracha of Sfiras Omer, is it only a night, or is it all day? So, what's the psak? So we're familiar. What you do is you count the next day without a bracha, and then you continue making a bracha afterwards. What's going on with that? What's going on is as follows. When it comes to the next day, so maybe I can count now, maybe I can't count now. Right? I have a doubt, so I can do it, but I don't make a bracha. Now let's look at the next day. If I could have counted during the day, did I miss a day yet? No, that's right. So I haven't missed a day yet, right? So if I can count by day, I counted yesterday by day. It's not a problem. What if I couldn't count the day? Then I missed a day. But even if I missed a day, according to half the opinions, I can keep on going with the bracha. So once I have that double suffix, a sfeik sfeika, you can keep on making a bracha. Similarly, let's say this happens all the time. Comes to count, and I can't remember what number I counted last night. Did I count the right number? Did I count the wrong number? I wasn't in shul, or I didn't hear the guy in shul. Whatever the story is, I'm not really sure. Do I count? What do I do today? So again, I want you to have a double doubt, what they call a sveik sveika. Maybe I counted the right day, maybe I counted the wrong day, but even if I counted the wrong day, it's not a big deal. I can still keep on counting afterwards. Even any slight excuse that you have, you can keep on going. Over Pesach, a woman came over to me and asked the shaila. She said she was davening mincha 12 minutes after shkia. That wasn't part of the question. That was part of the facts. Don't worry about that one. I got covered. And after she finished Shmoneh Esrei, she realized she didn't count Sfira the night before. So right there and then, 13 minutes after sunset, she counted Sfira for the day before. Can she keep counting with a bracha? So, what's there? So, there is a possibility, I guess, that 30 minutes after sunset isn't night yet. Right? If it's not night yet, it's still yesterday. Right? It's still yesterday. It's like counting by day. If it's counting by day, you didn't miss a day. And if you did miss a day, it's not a big deal. So you put it all together, and then once again, you can count with a bracha. One more case that comes up. What if someone totally misses a day? Let's say yesterday. Yesterday was 19, I think. So yesterday night, you didn't count. Right now we're sitting here and it's long enough after Shkia that forget it, it's gone. So the Beis Halevi points out that there are two different mitzvahs in Sfiras Omer. One is you're supposed to count 49 days, and the other is supposed to count 7 weeks. So he says, okay, your days you blew, but what's the weeks? So every Monday night, right, this Monday now we're going to count 21. They say that today's 21 days, that's 3 weeks. Then we're going to count 28, and next week, 4 weeks. He says, since there's a separate mitzvah to count weeks, even if you blew it on a non-Monday night this year, every Monday night you can make a bracha anyhow, because you have this double suffix. So that's the idea obviously you'd rather not miss a day, but if you do miss a day, obviously you have to keep on counting. If there's any doubt whatsoever, you can probably count with a bracha. That there's no problem with that whatsoever. Sfiras HaOmer happens to breed a lot of interesting questions. One interesting question is a question that people don't think about too much, is as follows. So, going back to the beginning of Sfira and Pesach. So we had the first Seder, and then at the second Seder we counted the first day of Pesach. Motzoi we counted the second day, etc. What does it say in the Chumash? In the Chumash it says that you're supposed to start counting the Sfira on the second day of Pesach. The fact that we had a second Seder indicates what? That we thought that it might be the first day. And the fact that we made Havdalah the next day, we thought that might be the second day. We have here in Chutzos, it's called Sveka Diyoma. We're not really sure what day is what. And since we're not sure what day is what, we keep 2 days of everything. We had 2 days of the first days of Pesach, we had 2 days of the last days of Pesach, we're going to have 2 days of Yom HaAtzmaut this year, right? We had 2 days of Yom HaShoah last week, right? So also we got 2 days of Shavuos. So the question is, why don't we count Misafek? Right? The first night we should have to say today's one day in the Omer. The next day we say, no, maybe it's one, maybe it's two. And then maybe it's two, maybe it's three. Being that we're not really sure when Pesach is, we're not really sure when Shavuos is, shouldn't we be equally not sure what the Sfira is? How could I sit there at the Seder on the one hand and make a bracha on Mora, make a bracha on Matzah, and assume that there's a good chance that this is the first day of Pesach, and then in good conscience count Sfira? And the next day, how could I be so sure I'm going to make Havdalah? I should be counting the first day of Sfira. So why don't we have Sveka Diyoma? Why don't we have it counting this way for Sfira as well? So there are a few interesting approaches. Well-known approach is the approach of the Dvar Avram. The Dvar Avram says that when it comes to counting, there's no such concept as counting Misafek. Counting means I know what it is. I ask you, how much is that? Three or four. Three or four isn't the counting. Right? Three or four is a guess. I could have guessed myself. Counting means I have to specifically know the number. That's what counting is. So therefore, if we would count Misafek, that wouldn't count as counting. Now that's very interesting for a few reasons. For starters, let's say I don't know what today's number is. I have a ballpark idea, but I'm not really sure where we're up to. Can I count two numbers and hope for the best? Today's three or four. So the Dvar Avram says no. Not only that, it's very interesting. The Dvar Avram is the following case. Let's say I'm not sure what tonight's number is. It's either three or four. I guess four. And I happen to hit it right. Son of a gun. So he says you're still not Yotze. Right? Counting Misafek isn't counting. And that's the reason why not. So therefore, when you get up to count Sfira, you have to be sure what number you're going to count, and you got to get it right, because if not, that's the definition of counting is not that way. Not everyone agrees with this, and in fact, this is a question that comes up sometimes. Sometimes people do count when they're not so sure what it is, and they guess, and sometimes they get it wrong, but sometimes they also get it right, son of a gun. So there are other approaches as well, why don't count Misafek? There's a famous approach by the Baal HaMaor who says as follows. The Baal HaMaor offers up the following possibility. So if I was counting, and the first night I say, tonight is the second Seder I say it's the first night of the Omer. Now, what am I going to say the second night? This might be the first, it might be the second. Second, third, third, fourth. When I get up to, thank you very much. When I get up to Shavuos, what am I going to do? I'm going to get up at Shavuos, and I'm going to say, today is Shavuos, but it might be the 49th day of the Omer. So that would be a zilzal. Today may or may not be Yontif. That's not so nice. You can't have a today may or may not be Yontif thing. So because of that, because you can't have a today may or not, that's why we don't do it. We don't start off with it because it's not going to have a happy ending. Shavuos in general, just to digress a little bit, is a very interesting type of suffix. In general, why do we have Sveika Dioma? So when things were well, when we had a base Amigdash, when the calendar was based on witnesses coming forward, the witnesses would come out and they'd tell us that today's Rosh Chodesh. There were two possibilities and they would tell us which one it is. Where did they tell it? They told it in Yerushalayim, by the Beis HaMikdash, by the Sanhedrin, by the Lishka HaGozes. Then they would have to get the word out. Now, how long from Rosh Chodesh Nisan did you have to get the word out for Pesach? 2 weeks. So anybody who lived within a two-week run of the messengers, they would find out. The other people really didn't know. The other people really had a suffix. They weren't sure which day was Yontif, and they had no choice. Right? So they had to be careful. Similarly, when it came to Sukkot, how long did they have to figure it out? Also 2 weeks. When it came to Shavuos, how long did they have to figure it out? 2 weeks. I hear everything from 5 days to 9 weeks. Pretty broad. Why do you say 5 days? Why did you say 9 weeks? That's right. He's got a point there. His point is that it doesn't say in the Torah that the sixth day of Sivan is Shavuos. Right? What does it say? It says, after Pesach, you count 9 weeks, 7 weeks. And at that point, whoever, right, and that's when it is. It didn't have to fall out on Vav Sivan. Right? It could have fallen out on different times. There's a famous question. We get up and we refer to Shavuos as Man Matan Torah Seinu. But the Torah was not given on Vav Sivan. Our Torah was given on Zion Sivan, we assume. So how can we say that? Right? So among the answers is that maybe the calendar was different that year. Maybe it was Vav Sivan. That's an approach. But the bottom line is, since there is no date for Shavuos in the Torah, all we know is that it's 7 weeks after Pesach, and we have 2 weeks to figure out when Pesach is. 7 plus 2 is 9, according to most days. So according to that, you had 9 weeks to figure out. In 9 weeks, they can get just about everywhere. So the Rambam already asked the question, why do we ever have a Sveik of the Yom HaShavuos? There never was a Sveik. So Rambam says, Shalom Rachuk Bein HaMoados. The Rambam says that you want to keep everything the same. So there's a much interesting study. So since it was never a Sveik, does that make it better or worse? There's a very important machokas between the Rambam and the Ritva on this topic. Similarly, nowadays, when we talk about Sveika Dioma, so there was a time, as we said, in history where there really was a suffix. There was a time in history where you didn't know what day Yontif was. That doesn't exist anymore. Nowadays, we all know when it is. Whenever Sinai Chapel says it is, that's when it is. Right? Whenever ShopRite says it is. Right? The people that are Koveyim, Bismanazah, the people who put out the calendars, that's what it is. They can tell you years. You go to Chabad.org, they can tell you the next 600 years what it is. Right? Right? So there's no surprise anymore. Right? The people in Israel don't have any inside information. We all know what it is. Right? There's no suffix. So why do we have Sveika Dioma? Taka. So we have it because it's a minog. The Gemara tells us that minog avoseinu biyodeinu. So what is the minog? Is the minog that we still pretend it's a suffix? Or is it a minog that we keep a second day yantar, but we don't know it's a suffix anymore? So that's a machokas between the Rambam and the Ritva, and that has some important ramifications, just to throw one or two out there. So you buy an esrog, there are certain times of esrogim you can't use on the first day, but you can use it for the rest of yantif. So what about a chutzlach? Can you use it on the second day? So the Ritva says, no, you can't use it because it's a suffix. Maybe it's the first day. Rambam says, come on, check your calendar. It's not. We all know it's not. Huh? Pick it up, use it, it's fine. Right? It's a very interesting discussion. This actually came up, I think, last year with us. So there's something called the Erev Tavshilin that I'm sure we're all familiar with. Erev Tavshilin is that if Yontif falls out on an Erev Shabbos, so since in order to allow you to cook for Shabbos, we do an Erev Tavshilin. So I think last Pesach, not this past one, the one beforehand, was a Thursday, Friday was the first days. So therefore, you make an Erev Tavshilin. So let's say you forgot to make your Erev Tavshilin. What do you do? So the Shulchan Aruch says, no problem. You don't have to rely on Rabbi Schoenfeld. There's another thing you can do. What you can do is as follows. What you can do is you can make an Erev Tavshilin on Thursday, on Yontif itself. How can you make the Erev Tavshilin on Yontif itself? He said, because it's a suffix. If today might be Yontif. If today's Yontif, then tomorrow's not. So I can cook for Shabbos, no problem. If today's not Yontif and tomorrow is, well then it's Erev Yontif and I can make an Erev Tavshilin. So the Shulchan Aruch says, in fact, you can do that. No problem, just don't make a bracha, that's fine. The Rambam, of course, doesn't buy this same idea. So he did that there's a definite change in the nature of Yontif Sheni that has to do with that or not. Many interesting questions, just to throw out some of them that people I'm sure are familiar with. The Shulchan Aruch says that you're supposed to say Ba Omer. The Mishnah Berurah says our minhag is to say La Omer. So, as we all know, that's what we ask, Lag La Omer, right? That's what we say. Because far according to the Mishnah Berurah, not so many people really say that. Just throwing that out there. That's one thing to discuss. Another interesting question is, approximately a seventh of the people in the world have their Bar or Bas Mitzvah during the Sfira. That's just the way it works. 7 weeks out of 52. So, what's the story if you have your Bar or Bas Mitzvah during Sfira? Can you keep on counting with the Bracha? After all, you're not going to do the entire 49. You missed the first 1, 2, whatever it is. So that's raised by the Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch, in fact, as Mekel says, since you were counting on a certain level of Chiyuv beforehand, assuming you didn't miss a day as a kid, you keep on going. On the other hand, what if someone's Megayer during the Sfira? It happens from time to time. So the assumption is that person can't count Sfira with a Bracha. That person should count, right? And should go to Shul and be Yotze with someone else's Bracha. But with that, we're not really as excited about. Very, very interesting question that comes up, is raised in a few Svarim, and that is the issue of the date line. So, the international date line, we're not sure where it is, but there has to be one, right? It's a physical fact. Right now, it's around 8:45 in New Jersey. That means in Chicago right now, it's 7:45 on a Sunday evening. And in Denver, it's 6:45 on a Sunday evening. And in California, in L.A., it's 5:45. You keep on going around the world. When you get back to here, it's going to be, again, 8:45. But it's going to be a day earlier. Right? Because if you keep on going around the world, an hour earlier, you're going to cross over. It's going to go from being Sunday to being Saturday. You're going to come around. It's going to be the same time, but Saturday.
The other way around.
What?
No,
I'm going west. I went to Chicago. What? Because they're relying on the international date line. I have no date line in my world. That's where I am. Right? So again, there has to be a date line. There has to be some place where it's going to jump ahead. Or else, it's going to be we're going to have the right time, but we're going to have the wrong day here. So therefore, by definition, we're going to have some place where there's a date line. Right? That's just... And if I would go the other way around, right, if I would go from here to those random places that you see on the El Al map as you fly, you know, to Gotthab and then et cetera, you're going to end up with the same thing, you end up being on Monday, right? You have the same problem the other way. So there has to be something called the international dateline. So what if somebody, in fact, flies now to Australia? They're flying now to Japan. So if you end up flying in that direction, you're going to... in all likelihood, end up in a situation. So right now, if I would start here, I would count Sfira, I would fly there. When I got tomorrow night, they'd be counting for Sunday night again. Right? So what do I do? Sounds so nice, let's count it twice. We'll do the same number over again. Is that what we're going to do? Do I get the day off? Right? Or going the other way. If I go the other way, If I'm going from Australia to here, so I'm going to go, we're going to skip a day. So what do I do in that situation? What? Good. So either way, so if I end up going the wrong way around the world, I can end up missing days, right? I count 20, I show up there counting 22. And in fact, I could do it again the next day, right? I could be counting 21 when they're counting 24 now. So what do you do about that? So the Lubavitch Rebbe, of blessed memory, has a very interesting approach. He is of the opinion that, in fact, you just count however you want to count. So, they count 28, you count 27. They count 29, you count 28. They count 49, you count 48. They have Shavuos, you count 49. They have second day Shavuos, you have the first day Shavuos. They have Motzei, you have the second day. And in fact, you can be off by several days if you play your cards right. So according to the Lubavitch Rebbe, since there is no date on the calendar for Shavuos, it's a very personal thing. It goes by your own personal sunrises and sunsets. And as such, you just follow it however you want it to go. And therefore, you could have it. So if I would, in fact, fly around the world and end up back here, I could have Shavuos on a totally different day. Which is important nafka minas for things like walking to the side of the street parking. But Your Honor, it's not my day. Important nafka minas. Right? So that is the approach of the Lubavitch Rebbe. Not everybody necessarily agrees with that. If someone finds themselves in this situation where they in fact have circled the world too many times during Sfira, then there are other opinions that in fact say, no, you have to count the way everybody else is counting. And if you miss a day, you're out. You're out and you're not counting Sfira with a bracha anymore. Again, you keep on counting, but you count with the places there. You can't have your own private Shavuos. You have to have a Shavuos that everybody else has as well, which is an interesting question. A few other things that come up, we'll just throw it out there. There is a... we have in the Beis Din, this is a case that almost came up recently. We get very excited about this, us Beis Din people. If someone finds themselves being a mamzer, so a mamzer can hardly marry anybody. It's a terrible situation. It does come up, though, too often. And a mamzer can either marry a mamzeres, a woman who's in the same situation. A mamzer can marry a giores, right? But in both of those cases, the children will be mamzerim, and this will go on forever. The Mishnah in Kedushin quotes the opinion of Rav Tarfon, which says that there's a possibility that mamzerim can become tar. How is that? In the event that a mamzer would marry a shifcha kananis, someone who has the status of a slave, then their children will have a status of eved, and you could just free the children and they will be kosher. That's a way of avoiding the problem. So, in the event you find a situation of somebody who's a mamzer, and these are among the most difficult cases, some of them happen to be pretty humorous, actually. We had a case recently, actually, it's been a year or two already, a guy walks into the base, and he says, listen, you know, I got to ask you guys a shayla. I'm becoming a Baal Tshuva. I think there might be an issue. If I can't marry anybody, I'm not going any further. So, okay, reasonable. He said, well, you know, my mother married a guy, and they had an Orthodox ceremony. Then she had a civil divorce, and then she married another guy, and I'm the product of the second marriage. That's pretty bad. So we said, let's look into it. So we said, could we talk to her first husband? And maybe the Kedushin wasn't good or something. They said, no, you can't talk to him. He said, why not? So he's dead. When he dies, long before I was born. Ends up long before I was born was 9.5 months. Don't ask, don't tell. We figured that was good enough. So this is a real possibility. If you find yourself in a situation where the person is in fact a mamzer, So what you encourage the person to do is go to Geirus classes. See, they find some, start dating, you know, non-Jewish girls who want to convert. And then, assuming you find something that works out, then tell her, instead of having a regular Geirus, we're going to do this one a little bit different. Right? You know, you'll be a slave. You know, it's like Sephardim. It's all good. It's all good. It's okay. Right? And therefore, by doing that, in fact, she's chayav in mitzvahs, and it technically works. Famously, Rav Soloveitchik did not approve of this. Rav Moshe Feitzing supposedly did. Supposedly, Rabbi Tendler has done this practically. So this comes up. So there's an interesting question, which you wouldn't have thought counts, but what if someone becomes an Eved? What if someone's an Eved, and then they get free in the middle of the sphere? Does that count? So the Mishnah Berurah, believe it or not, discusses that as well, and says that since an Eved is chayav in mitzvahs technically, even going forward, they will do it as well. So I was told that 8:50 was the cut point. We give time for questions. Is that okay, Steph? No?
Yeah? Anybody have any questions?
No? Oh, so I can keep on going? Okay, good. I'd love to hear me speak. Today is our lucky day. Okay, so what? Oh, it's all right. We're good. Who knows if he spit in that first? I know where it came from. Sealed, right. Okay. So we'll move on to Shavuos a little bit. This is very interesting, actually. Once we'll just pull it together, there is a very interesting medrash. This medrash really answers a lot of questions. Shavuos, as we know, really is the holiday of two different mitzvahs. Right? There's two themes in the book of Rus. One theme is Geirus, right? That Rus is the Geirus, right? Rus, why Rus? Rus is gematria of 606. Instead of having seven mitzvahs, she now added 606, 613. That is Rus. On the other hand, it's the idea you have of Yibam, Chalitza, right? That Rus wanted to marry Boaz. However, there was another man who was closer related, etc. So the question comes up, wait a second. If you think about this, these are the only two mitzvahs, but they can't possibly live together. If Rus was a Giyares in the book of Rus, then at the beginning of the book, before she was Megayer, she was not Jewish. And if she wasn't Jewish, she couldn't have gotten married. So therefore, to talk about the fact that someone has to do Yibam or Chalitza doesn't make any sense. If she did get married, and she was Jewish at the beginning of the book, it is highly unlikely that she converted. There are certain people that we don't allow to convert to Judaism, and Jews is one of those people. Once you're Jewish, you can't do it again. So that's a very basic question on the story. So there's an interesting approach, which happens to be practically very important for people to realize. When it comes to Geirus, it is necessary to undergo certain processes. Men have to have a bris, people have to go to the mikveh. That's the process. However, most important, obviously, is you have to accept Judaism. You have to be mekabel Torah mitzvahs. Right? One of the reasons we read Rus on Shavuos is because how do we know how to make a ger? The Gemara in Krisus tells us that's based on the original Geirus. Up until Maimon Har Sinai, we weren't Jewish. Avram wasn't Jewish. Yitzhak wasn't Jewish. Yaakov wasn't Jewish. The Shvatim weren't Jewish. Up until then, Moshe wasn't even Jewish. There was no Jewish people. We all had to undergo a conversion. And therefore, we read the book of Rus to show that we're all actually converts on a certain level. What was the main part of Kabbalah Satara? It wasn't the bris. It wasn't the karban. It wasn't the tefillah. It was the Nasa V'Nishma, the accepting of the Torah. So obviously, if someone wants to convert, and they say, okay, we'll undergo whatever we have to do, but they don't accept the Torah, they don't accept the Torah mitzvahs, they're not Jewish. There used to be a thing years ago in the Israeli Basketball League that there was a rule. I don't know if the rule applies anymore. I just don't follow the Israeli Basketball League. I do follow it as closely as I like to, which means not at all. And you used to only have to have two chutznikim on your team, right? Only two guys on your team could be non-Israeli. So I remember this happened when we were in Israel, that Ken the Animal Bannister suddenly was released by the Knicks for whatever odd reason he had to go, and he came to Ramat Gan to play. Now, being that Ramat Gan already had two chutznikim, this was a problem. So what they did in order to get Ken HaChaya, as he was known at the time, was they sent him to a certain rabbi in the Midwest. This rabbi understood that he really wanted to be Jewish. Within the week, Ken was Jewish. He came to Israel on the law of return. And as such, he was no longer a foreigner. He was now an Israeli citizen. And he played for the team. It is highly unlikely that anyone really thinks that Ken the Animal Bannister is Jewish at this point. It's more like the Elliot Maddox is than he is. I'm just throwing that out as by the way. So why not? I assume he had a bris. I assume it's a mikvah. No, you need to have Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. You have to accept it. And, you know, you have to really be, we all make our mistakes. But you have to be accepted. I'm going to keep kosher. I'm going to keep Shabbos. You know, I'm going to put on tefillin. The assumption was he was unaware of any of these things. He did not accept it. There are situations that happen sometimes when people are being megayer for reasons other than the most pure of reasons, where it's not clear if they're accepting or not. Right? Not every case is as easy as this. So, for example, if someone is converting for the sake of marriage, you could be in a situation you're not really sure if the person's Jewish or not. They said all the right answers, but who knows? How do you find out? So, in the event the marriage falls apart, if the person continues acting as a Jew, then you'll know from the beginning it was real. So that was the story with Rus and Naomi and Orpah, for that matter. They all married nice Jewish boys, and everything went down the hill pretty quick. They lost all the money, the husbands died. Very sad situation. So what happened then? So at that point, Naomi says to the girls, listen, this didn't work out for you. Leave, you don't have to be Jewish anymore. So what gave her the right to say that? They converted? The answer is no. If you're willing to leave now, it's indicative that you were never Jewish. The fact that you're willing to pack up and leave indicates that you were never serious about this. And therefore, when Orpah, in fact, takes her up on the offer, right? So it's clear that Orpah was never Jewish, as opposed to Rus, which no matter how hard they try, then it's clear that she was a Geras. And right now, we know that she was always a Geras. That's very interesting, because if you tell me, no, if someone says the magic word, they're Jewish, and Orpah then is just as Jewish as Rus. Rus has a famous great-grandson named David. Orpah has a famous kid also named, that's good for the women's side, men have obviously never read Tanakh. Right. So David and Goliath, in fact, were Mishpacha. Right? If you tell me that Kabbalah Samitzvah doesn't matter, so Goliath is just as Jewish as David is. And that kind of changes our view of everything. Now, David HaMelech himself, up until now, is a very interesting fellow, right? If you remember, how does David HaMelech become the king? Shmuel HaNavi gets a Nevuah, that's what Nevi'im do. He gets a Nevuah, and the Nevuah says that, go to Yishai, one of his sons are going to be the king. So he shows up there, and Yishai trots out his seven sons, tries the first, not the first, not the second, goes through seven, nothing. So he says to Yishai, we got a problem here. I said, bring out your sons. God said one of the kings. None of these guys are the king. He said, oh, now you mentioned I got one more. That's such a strange story. Like, okay, so David wasn't your favorite. You should have at least made the top eight out of eight. Right? How come he didn't even offer him? Put him at the end of the line, that's fine. So there's an unbelievable medrash about this. The medrash comments, and the medrash can be found in its entirety. The only place I know that's really written totally is in the Sefer Todah, the book of our heritage, where he writes as follows, that Yishai, the Gemara tells us that Yishai was one of four people ever who never sinned in his entire life. The only reason Yishai died was because you have to die, right? Because of the original Cheira Kamoni, because of the snake, that's the only reason he died. Yishai was such a tzaddik that at one point in his life, he began to have doubts whether he was Jewish or not. Why? Because his grandmother was Rus. Rus was from Moab, and technically he says Moab can convert. Now, Boaz had a drasha, Right? He said that the Isser is Moav, Moaviva, lo Moavia. It only affects the men, not the women. And a lot of people disagreed with this. Right? When it says we have to kill Amalek, we don't say Amaleki v'lo Amalekis. So in fact, what happens? Boaz says, I'm going to follow the opinion of Shmuel, that I have, the tradition I have. Boaz goes, he marries the woman, and what happens to him then the night of the wedding? He dies. People are saying, that wasn't such a good idea, now was it in hindsight? So people really had doubts as to whether Rus was Jewish and whether her offspring were Jewish. Right, so Yishai himself said, maybe they're right. And if they're right, I shouldn't remain married to my wife. I shouldn't live with her anymore. So he decided to stop living with his wife. But then he said, no, it's not good for a man not to be married. So therefore, he went to his Shifra and said, no, if I am a Moabi, I can marry a Shifra, I'm going to marry you. He said, but maybe I'm not a Moabi. So he goes over to her and he says as follows. You are a Shifra. I'm letting you go free on the condition that I am not a Moabi. So if I'm a Moavi, you're a Shifra. If I'm not a Moavi, you're not a Shifra. Now let's get married. She responds by saying, huh? What was that? Where did that come from? So she goes to Mrs. Yishai and says, you're not going to believe just what happened. Like, what's going on here? So he says, oh, my husband's crazy. He's so religious. He doesn't drink the water. Forget it. You know, tonight we're switching beds. And with that, Mrs. Yishai became pregnant, and they had David. Now, Yishai knew he hadn't lived with his wife in quite some time. And if she was pregnant, short of Franco Harris and the Immaculate Reception, there's something very wrong here. So what's going on here? So the assumption is that this guy is not his son. It's not his son. So what are they going to do with him? So David Amelis is ignored through his whole life. He's assumed he's sent out to be a shepherd. And you look at Tehillim, Avi v'imi azavuni, that I've been abandoned by my parents. His whole life seems like such a misery. Yeah, because he was totally abandoned. Only when finally Shmuel comes around and says, guess what, you've got another son, does it raise a possibility? Hey, maybe. And everything changes at that point. So it's an unbelievable story in terms of understanding Shmuel and understanding Rus and everything. That Medrash really changes everything. Besides that, there happens to be a very halachic, important halachic ramification of it. A few years back, we had the following, this guy go back over 20 years, because I was still in the dorm at the time. So at the time, a guy shows up, and it's a couple, and the woman is 8 months pregnant, and he says, I'm Jewish, she's not, she wants to convert. Now, clearly they weren't converting for the sake of marriage, because that seemed to have not bothered them. Right? They were actually doing it because they really wanted to. So the first step you do in a Beis Din is check. Well, are you really Jewish? Is she really a shiksa? So in fact, she was a shiksa l'chol adei. It's like a badat shiksa, no doubt about it. You name it. Es chazafresh, not a question in the world. He, on the other hand, was a suffolk mamzer. So what would happen? If she doesn't convert, what will the status of her children be? They'll be Goyim. And what can we do about that? We can convert them. No problem. If she converts, can they get married? Yeah. Mamza can marry a Gyaris, but what will the kids be? Suffig Mamzerim. So what do you tell them to do? As a matter of policy, we don't encourage people to intermarry. On the other hand, it seems to be a point here. So my roommate at the time, this fellow named Sabalovsky, maybe you've heard of him, came up with the following approach. So the first question, so why don't we just convert her as a Shifra? But that's not going to work because he's only a Suffolk Mamzer. If he's not a Mamzer, he can't marry a Shifra. So the idea that we were going to do was as follows. The approach we wanted to take was have him make her into a Shifra and then be Mishacher, her, let her go free, Al Tanai. If I'm a Mamzer, you don't go free. Same thing as Yishai did. If I'm not a Mamzer, you do go free. They get married. Their children will be. Anybody? Confused? What? Safek Avadim. You can free them. Everyone will live happily ever after. This is a yeshiva guy's dream, right? Then you get a geiris. Be a geiris. You get make her a shifra, and then you have a star shichra al tanai. This was the dream to actually use the move of Yishai. Bottom line is, Rav Yashiv came. Every party needs a pooper, and that's why he was there. He paskened that the guy was not a mamzer, and that was the end of it. How did he paskin? Tales of our gedolim. How did Rav Yashiv paskin? So we called up and we said, "Well, here's a guy. The grandparents were from the small town in Europe, etc., etc." So he said, "Which town?" So he said, "Gives him the name of the town." He said, "Not a mamzer." "How'd you do that?" He said, "I'm from the same town. I knew the grandfather. Don't worry about it." All right. We should share happy occasions. Thank you very much.